Welcome to the KP Podcast, where we talk about the business of real estate, a podcast about leveraging opportunities, growing your business, and experiencing financial freedom. Here are your hosts, Keith Anderson and Peter Kamboukos.
Hey everyone, welcome to the KP Podcast. I'm Pete, sitting here with Keith, and we're coming to you from the Forum in Chandler. Keith, how are you doing today, man?
Doing good. Today is actually my 1 year wedding anniversary.
Hey, congratulations. Yes. Happy anniversary.
Thank you. And,
and you decided to be in here doing a podcast with all of us.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Not by the desire of my wife, I tell you. So if you see her running around this week, apologize to her for me.
Or maybe that's her present. She gets a little break.
She gets
from
away
you
from me. That's what it is. Yeah. I keep telling myself that, but then she gives me those eyes of like, what the heck are you doing? Get the hell back home or something, you know? But. And on top of it, it doesn't add to the fact that she's like 38 weeks pregnant. So then there's that. So
any day now. Huh?
Any day. Everybody out there hoping for an April Fool's baby. It's a lifetime of fun. Very excited about it. So those of you guys listening, please pray for me and my child will be born on the 1st of April.
So my next episode might be just me. We'll see.
Yes, we'll see.
But it's been any day. Well,
I might have to escape the screams and come in and film another episode, which will also put me in the doghouse with the wife even further. So
I don't know. You show up. You're like, what are you doing here? Yes. Didn't you just have a baby? You're like, yeah, let's do the podcast.
And my nephew was born a couple days ago as well. So man, it's kind of been a crazy. Yeah. I think we have 10 friends and family due within the next like 3 months.
Are you kidding
me? It's ridiculous.
Wow.
Yeah. So
you got a happy grandma and grandpa over there.
Yes.
They're going to have their hands
full. So shout out to all the people getting ready to create some life. You know,
it's awesome. Helping those demographics for the real estate market.
Yeah. We're trying to increase demand here. Okay.
there you go.
And supply is just getting lower and lower with the way we're going. So
I like it. So let's get into today's topic. And the thing we're going to be talking about today, Keith, is will rising rates crash the real estate market?
Well, I don't know, P. No, so, I mean, I think the big thing is we just saw Fed increase rates.
Yep. So, right?
This is the big topic.
Let's make sure we're all on the same page with it. So the Fed just increased the Fed's fund rate for the first time this last about a week ago, first time since 2018. Mm-hmm. So it's been a while.
2018. That was like right before, honestly, if you think about it, that was right before we start to see the movement in the market continue to climb heavier and heavier. It got faster from that point. The supply mm-hmm. started to shrink, demand started to increase, and rates rose.
Yep, at a faster rate. Supply started to shrink at a faster rate. It was already coming down.
Yeah.
But yeah, it picked up steam, right? And so, you know, I think that kind of ties into the first things. But again, just to make sure we're all on the same page with this, so the Fed did raise the Fed's fund rate. But remember, that's not directly correlated to mortgage rates. Right. And sometimes we'll see, you know, clients that say, oh, they just raised rates. You know, that the Fed funds rate is the rate at which banks lend to each other or they borrow from the Fed, if you want to think about it that way. Now, the theory is, and the way that works is that should then trickle out into other rates and, you know, eventually into mortgages. But the Fed affects short-term rates.
So basically, when the Fed raises those rates, if you will, right, it now affects the bank's ability to gather money and resources to be able to lend out. Is that what you're
saying? Well, the cost at which they're doing that, right.
So if it makes it more expensive to them, then theoretically that should increase the margins or shrink the margins for the lenders out there in all forms, mm-hmm. right? This is not just the mortgage industry, right, as
correct.
Well? This should would be. Affect auto. This would affect a lot of things.
Yeah,
correct?
And it has more effect, and that's why we say they affect more of those short-term rates. And so it has much more direct effects on things like auto loans, credit cards, personal loans, you know, shorter-term loans, if you will. Mortgages, you know, they're more off the 10-year 10-year bonds. And so those are longer term rates. They fluctuate more with the market. But over time, you know, in theory, like I said, if the Fed keeps raising their rates, it's going to trickle through and affect those mortgage rates. So and the reason that we care is because obviously if mortgage rates go up, that means payments go up. That means payments become less affordable, affecting demand, right?
And we're already seeing a dramatic movement because of the price points, right? So the price points have been climbing, so that's made it less affordable. Now, mm-hmm. if rates, like we've talked about in previous episodes, if rates climb, it's going to also hurt the affordability metrics that we're looking at. So both of those together equals tough times to buy. Now, that being said, that gets us to our point. Does the increase in rates cause this market to crash? Like, are we crashing because of these rate hikes?
Yeah. So I think we should dig into a couple of the things that we're seeing. What have we seen in the past? What are we seeing now?
History. We need to review history.
And what are we looking at? So, you know, first thing I would say before we get into some of that history is let's remember that markets, you know, the mortgage market, the bond market, interest rates, they're front running in anticipation of what the Fed's been doing. So the Fed's been telling us since the beginning of this year that they're going to raise rates. And so we've seen mortgage rates going up since the beginning
months
of the year.
Months before.
Months.
Yeah.
And that's normal because, you know, the markets are front running and pricing in what's going to happen. And so, you know, the thing is, it's not that rates are going up now. They're already up. Mm-hmm. And so we've already seen quite that increase. But let's look back at that history. What have we seen when the Fed is raising rates in the past? And so, like we said, last time was 2018. But I'll look at this. Here's a stat I pulled, Keith. The last six times mortgage rates rose, so that's six times since 1994. Wow. Okay. So they've rose six times since 1994. Every single time, house prices have continued to go up. Every time.
So it's almost like something's up, because in essence, if the point of these rate hikes is to make it a little less affordable and calm the market down and balance us out a little bit with everything, you would think that prices should steady out and probably come to a, you know, more of a halt, right? Like that makes common sense to you.
You would think, but I think what you just said is, you know, in that comma, you just hit the nail on the head. If they're trying to calm things down, if they're trying to dampen things a little bit, think about what that means. That means things are running hot. Yeah. That means things are going good.
Yeah.
That means the reason, in theory, we could discuss whether it's actually this way, but in theory, they're raising rates because the economy is good.
Yeah.
They're raising rates because the market is good.
Yeah.
And so they're trying to cool it off a little bit, if you will, so that we don't have runaway inflation or the markets don't run away. So they're trying to cool it off. So if you think about it, it's counterintuitive a little bit, but they're raising rates because things are good. So it does make sense when you think about it that way to go, wait a minute, every time they raise rates, house prices keep going up. Well, yes, if in theory they're raising them because things are going well, then of course they're going to continue to go up. That's why, again, in theory, they're raising them because things are doing well.
I mean, so put it into layman's perspective, I guess, if you like to buy the hot and spicy McChicken at McDonald's and they had record sales for the hot and spicy McChicken at McDonald's at 99 cents a piece, and McDonald's says, hey, we're making this thing $1.25 because you guys are buying a lot of these McChickens and we're running low on chicken supply. Okay. Yeah. We got limited patties. So we got to go $1.25 for these hot and spicies. And then they keep buying them.
So
that's what you're saying. For
oddly enough, Keith, that's actually not a terrible example.
Hey, there I'm we are. We're surprised. Here. We made it. We're figuring this thing out.
I'm surprised you came up on that one on the fly. And it's not the worst example in the world, because that can give people a picture of what actually happens, right? So you have more people wanting that McChicken and they can't keep up with that. So they go, okay, we're going to raise the price. Now, what happens there is the people who were maybe like, I only kind of like the McChicken, and now that it's more expensive, I won't buy it. Or, you know, you have some people that go, I used to buy three McChickens every time. Now maybe I'll buy two. Those are the people, as we call it, at the margins. Those are the people at the edge. And so that is where they fall off. You get the people at the ends, you know, if you look at the housing, it's the people that were barely affording, you know, barely qualifying, barely able to afford the house before. They're the ones that are going to fall off. However, what happens is, let's say that's, you know, the 10 or 20% at the edges. Well, the 80% still buying. The 80% still moving forward.
And then that's my conversation with, like, this is something I want to kind of analyze today. And you tell me what you think. But typically, when you see something go up in price at times, and or you feel this trend heading down the direction of prices going to increase over time, right? And this is what the Fed's telling us, is that, hey, we're gonna price in these price adjustments for you guys, and we're explaining that this is gonna happen. Typically, if I were to tell you, hey, this McChicken's going to go to $1.25, and there's a good chance we're going to try and get this McChicken up to $2. Maybe then does the 80% that likes to buy these still the same and says, oh, crap, I need to buy more McChickens because my McChicken's going to cost more money, and maybe I need to freeze these McChickens while we can at $1.25, and I'll eat them in the microwave 6 months from now when they're worth $1.75.
Keith, that's two somewhat coherent points in the same day. You might as well just go home right now.
I'm just saying. So the margin guys fell off.
Yeah.
But what's to say that the 80% didn't just increase their purchasing by 20% to make up the gap?
Or in what we probably saw here at the beginning of the year, because we saw prices continue to rise and supply actually hit new record lows. Because just like you said, the Fed is warning people, this is coming, and people are seeing rates going up. So what are those people at the margins going to try to do? Uh-oh, I better go buy it now. Before rates go up or while I still can. So we actually saw that run up, and we saw us hit record low supplies this year. We thought we hit the record last year, and we did, and then we broke that record at the beginning of this year.
And now they're pinching
for low supply.
They're pinching that supply right off, right here at the end. And it's like it was already tight, and now everybody's trying to rush in and get it for rates climb. And it's making it even tighter.
And so that's part of the thing here of, are we going to see, you know, this market crash? And you remember, we have to have more sellers than buyers. And so we're nowhere near that. Like, we have supply at ridiculously low levels. And so what does that mean? It's going to slow things down. But again, here in Arizona, we had over 30% increase in appreciation in prices last year. So yeah, is that going to slow down considerably this year? I don't know, but probably, you know what I mean? And so but we're still moving forward, because in order for things to crash or prices to come down, that means we'd have to have more people selling than buying. And we're nowhere near that at this point. Like, we're not even close to anything like that, like coming up on our radar at this point.
I'm just at the point now where I feel like I'm almost a broken record, Pete. Like, we've been talking about, is the market going to crash for the last 3 to 4 years?
Well, you keep having people that are waiting for that. Yeah. And I think part of it is they want that. And I don't mean that in like a bad way, but it's like they want to buy at a cheaper price.
Yeah,
and
so they want affordability.
It's like they're almost hoping, like, oh, is it going to crash? Like, then I could go in and buy. And you're like, well, if you think about all the people that are waiting for that or want that, that should be another indication to you that that's not going to happen. Now, because you have all these people wanting to buy.
I just think of some of the original homebuyers that I was helping and going through the process with that told me, no, I don't want to buy. I'm waiting for a crash.
They've been waiting since 2016.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's been 5 to 6 years when they were telling us that.
And I
was like, are you sure? Because like, inventory is still somewhat low, and like, the market's moving this way. Are you sure you want to do that? We're fairly low priced. Right. We're like the lowest in the entire country.
Very affordable.
At that time in 2016, you could buy a house in Gilbert 3-2 for like $200,000. Mm-hmm. Like, it's $500,000 for that same house now. It's crazy.
And I would say, just to clarify on that, it's been 6 years since we were in a, you know, flat-ish, not even, but,
no, just,
you know, just
slower,
slow increases.
8% appreciation.
Yeah,
7%
or less. But you know, it's been well over a decade since prices have gone down. And so, you know, it's been a long time. But yeah, some of those are, so we've got record low supply. The other thing too is people talk about this affordability issue. You know, hey, prices are going up, you know, mortgage rates are going up. We have an affordability issue. People aren't going to be able to buy. And the question that they forget is, well, compared to what? Because they still got to live somewhere. So affordable, you know, it's becoming unaffordable compared to what? Are you going to rent? Because that's not affordable.
Yeah.
Right.
It's just as expensive. I think that's the point that I'm trying to make is I'm starting to think the market's not going to crash at all in the real estate sector. I'm starting to think it might just stay put. Like, I think it might just stop. Like, it might just get to a point where supply and demand kind of equal themselves out a little bit, and there's just enough houses for just enough people. We don't see prices drop, but they just don't increase anymore. Like, I think we might go through a transition in our country where, especially hot markets like Phoenix and other places, where maybe it's 3 to 4 years, but what's to say they don't just stop?
Yeah. And I think just to clarify on that, I think like what we're saying is anytime soon, because sure, eventually, you know, demographics will change, things will change over the longer term. And we very well
at some point might see a
crash. But again, when we're looking out at these next couple of years here, like you said, we've got such a supply imbalance. We've got so many people and jobs and industries moving here. you know, that yeah, over the next couple of years, you know, we're just not seeing that. And so, like you said, we've got these folks that need to live somewhere. Mm-hmm. They're either going to rent or they're going to buy, or you'll have a smaller group that, you know, gets roommates to rent a place or stays at home with parents if they're younger or whatever. You've also got this group of people that have locked in these low rates, yeah. Right?
Why would they leave?
And now they're not going to leave, or they can't afford to leave. You know, if you've locked in at 3% or 3.5% and you've got a reasonable mortgage and now prices are higher, you got to have a real good reason to sell that house, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's like you get grandfathered in. Yeah. It's a common thing. You get grandfathered into a special program, a special rate, a split, whatever it is. We talk about the real estate side of it. If you're in a special program that they don't offer anymore, you see it in cell phone plans and all these other things out there where you're on the old mm-hmm. plan and you have that grand, and you don't. Here's the sad part. I mean, I used to sell phones over a decade ago now, it feels like. It's getting close. And when people had an old plan, they never upgraded their phone. They never did. They didn't. So think about it in a common day. It would be really weird to not upgrade your phone within 2 years. The cell phone industry completely changed that look. They said, hey, every 2 years you need to upgrade your phone because your plan's made for that. It's built in. Trade us back your old phone. We'll give you a new one. Plan price stays the exact same. It's genius. But 10 years ago, people had these special custom plans and they didn't offer 2 year upgrades the same. We're seeing that same kind of concept in the fact that they would put off getting a new phone, and they would go buy things cash, or they would go try and find a workaround because they didn't want to get rid of that initial plan that was saving them money on right. their monthly payment. So at some point, if rates climb and affordability climbs through the roof, you don't get the option now to go and buy and upgrade your home and get into a house with a pool. Now you're starting to look at things like, well, now we need to figure out how to make this house work. Like, yeah. Do we add a pool? Can we, you know, redecorate? Right. Can we fix this house? We hate the carpet. Well, let's put in hardwood flooring, because the alternative is buy a new one at $200,000 more expensive, or a rate at 5%.
And we've seen this again. If you look at history, look at places in California, and you'll have some older folks in there, and they're on a fixed income and they're not making a lot of money, and they're living in places where houses are $1.5 million, $2 million. And you're like, man, how do they afford to live here? They're in this super expensive neighborhood. Well, they can afford to live there because they bought it 25 years ago for $300,000 or $200,000.
Which stands to reckon. I don't understand why they haven't sold this thing for $3 million.
Well, maybe they like living there, but the point is, like, they can't, you know, for whatever reason.
Go to Texas, use the money. Like, I don't know, $3 million, $300K purchase.
You see it, yeah.
But yeah, no, so, stay in their way.
So I think another important point is lending standards. So again, when we're talking about, is there going to be a crash, and, you know, what's going to happen there? One thing we've talked about is you have to have more sellers than buyers. One way to have more sellers than buyers is if you have people that are forced to sell, right? Because they're in distress or they have other issues, like we saw during the crash last time. Well, something we've talked about a lot is over this last, you know, decade plus since that last crash, lending standards have not been easy. This has actually been very tough lending standard compared to history. When we look at especially what was going on before the last crash, where anybody could get a loan, you could fog up a mirror, there was no income verification, no ask, no nothing, and they were just handing out loans. And that's not been the case for the last decade plus. It's been relatively difficult, which means we've got buyers that are much more well qualified. In addition to that, we've had prices running up, which means these people are in equity positions. So even if somebody did get in trouble, they can sell because they're not underwater. I mean, look at this stat I pulled, Keith, on this one. You know, and this is just here in Arizona. Wow. Of homeowners in Arizona that have a mortgage, 40% of those, so 4 out of 10 homeowners with a mortgage here in Arizona, have 50% or more equity. And if you think about it for a second, number one, that's crazy. But number two,
that's a lot of cash out there.
Number two, it makes sense because the house prices increased here 32% last year.
So if they were in 20% purchase, you're right there.
You're close. Exactly. And so you've got people sitting there generally.
You've owned a house for 3 years and they're 50% equity.
Exactly.
3 years is all it took.
So let's take somebody like that. They've owned this house for 3 years. They lose a job. They lose all their income and they're forced to sell. Well, they don't have to. It's not a distress sale at that point.
They have plenty of
equity. They can sell that house. And in a market with incredibly low inventory, they're going to sell it probably pretty quick.
Yeah. Well, and then, but the alternative of that exact same situation, like, let's go into that right there. You just said they lost their job. they need to sell.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in essence, if they have 50% equity, right, that mortgage payment's probably way lower than anything they could ever get now if they go and move. And if they go rent, it's going to be higher. So then my alternative argument is maybe they don't sell. Maybe they have to stay and they just got to find a way to – maybe they pull a little cash out and go find a way to get a job because their mortgage payment will never be lower. Their rate will never be lower. In fact, it would cost them more money to sell.
Yeah, rent,
so in
rent
essence,
will probably
like,
be higher.
So now you're telling me someone loses their job and they're not forced to sell because they have such a cheap payment – what you go find a job like that's what you
sure
you know like but like
assuming they can find a job yes we don't know what
the
circumstances
other time was
would be there,
the
yeah.
other situations were like your monthly mortgage couldn't be met, like you couldn't mm-hmm. pay that, and there was cheaper alternatives. There was a get out of jail type card of short sell your house, get away from that crazy amount of debt and go rent for $800 cheaper.
Right,
that's not the case.
Right.
They can't go rent for $800 cheaper.
Yeah. Now, you may have some people that are forced in those situations because they don't
transition
have any cash
out.
or they have to go somewhere else for a job or whatever. So you might have some of those. But again, it's not, you know, they're not underwater.
They're less forced, I think, in
exactly.
this market.
And so you have those situations. Now, all that being said, you know, we focus a lot here on the Arizona market. And the Arizona market, like we said, number one, we're in a much different place than we were you know, 12, 14 years ago with the economy, you know, the way it's spread out a lot. Now we have a lot more with the electric vehicles and tech and chips and healthcare. The economy is much more broad based now than it was. And we've had a lot of employers moving here, a lot of jobs and a lot of people. So Arizona is going to hold up, you know, fairly well. But you are going to have markets as these rates go up. And we're already seeing it in markets, as we said before. There is no national real estate market. There are individual markets. And so you have individual markets that will and are starting to have issues. And so it's never the same across the board. Mm-hmm. You know, like we talk about, I mean, you know, what's going on in Miami, Florida is completely different than what's going on in Phoenix and completely different than what's going on in Boise and what's going on in Chicago. So each of them have their own situation. Some of them have, you know, things that ran up too high. You have, you know, populations that didn't grow as much or people leaving or whatever they are.
Yeah.
So you will have, and you are starting to see individual markets that have and having issues, but it is market by market. And overall, you're not going to see that, you know, in the vast majority, but you will see markets that absolutely will have issues.
I just think of the stock market when you're sharing this is like we have these big indexes that we look at, right? That judge the scale of the whole market overall, but they're comprised of many different stocks inside and many different companies. And we evaluate each of those companies individually, but at the whole, we look at the S&P and we look at the Dow and we're looking at these big indexes and we're like, okay, it's going up. It's in the green. So the market's good. It's the same in the real estate market. We're looking at the national real estate market. And we're like, wow, it's flying. But here's this other company on the side just plummeting. And you could miss that because Arizona's picking up all the slack and helping the thing go up.
Yep.
It's just the same. So in reality, the real estate market is just a big index and we can't look at that big picture. You got to dissect these little companies and these micro markets that we're analyzing. Arizona's killing it. You know, they're climbing like a lot of these other big companies are to help hold together the whole index as a whole. So the conversation is like there's lots of movement within something this big. You can't just look at one broad, you know, spectrum and expect the market to move that way.
And let's look at, you know, where we've seen that migration and people moving into. So the Sun Belt areas, you know, places like Arizona and Texas and Florida and, you know, the Carolinas and Tennessee and all these places that all these people move there. Well, even if things, like we said, slow, there's still a lot of people looking for houses and there's still, you know, a lot of jobs that went there. But if you've got some other areas, you know, California and the Northeast, the Chicago area where people were leaving and then things slow down, well, you could have trouble in some of those areas, you know. So that's definitely stuff to think of. The other thing is, you know, okay, we've talked about this as it relates to the real estate market and what we're seeing in the supply in different markets, but what could the risk be? You know, what should we look for?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the big risks is that the Fed overdoes this. You know, if you think about it this way, if they start raising, you know, this time they raised it a quarter point. But what if they start raising half a point each meeting or a full point and they keep doing that and they raise them too much, too fast,
to slow
all
it
of
down.
The above, to slow it down and they overshoot this? Well, the risk you run is that maybe that affects, and it would affect the overall economy.
Yeah.
So maybe they cause a recession and you have, you know, people losing jobs and companies closing, and that could affect these markets and the things that we're talking about. So that is a risk, even though it's not directly to the housing market. You could have a risk to the larger, broader economy if the Fed overdoes this. And they have been known to break a thing or two in the past, you know? So that is definitely something to keep an eye on.
I think of the analogy we use all the time, and it's that car going down the highway at 150, 160 miles an hour, whatever. It's one thing to slowly let the engine take the car back down. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you tap the brakes a little just to slow it down and ease up. But if you throw those brakes on, you could be doing damage to a lot of different things. More if you're trying to protect the engine, right? Like, that's your goal. It's like, we need to slow down. The engine's overheating. We got to slow it down. Well, if you throw on the brakes, you're going to break your brake pads. You're going to hit all your shocks are going to go to crap. Yeah. Like, what else are you
on your tires?
Yeah, your tires are getting hurt. You're damaging other things by moving too quickly. And like you've said, off air, is the Fed has gone to a point of breaking things so many times in our history, right? And so what's to say they don't lay on the emergency brake and just hope for the best, right? There's a chance that that happens.
Yep.
And if the car's saying, I'm good, I'm rested, I can keep this pace, and they're like, no, screw it, we're going to put it all the way to zero, what does that affect? And that's where we're going to start to see rates affect the market in a way that may cause a crash, but not in the same way we've seen it in the past. It never, you know, what do you say? History often repeats itself, history rarely repeats itself, but it often rhymes.
Right.
Right? Like, that's the key. We're going to see something similar. It's just not going to be the exact same. So
it'll
don't look for
the
exact
same.
Right. Look for something like it, something different. A different body part is going to break. A different car part is going to break in a different way. But it's something still going to break at some point. Like, that's the key.
I also think, and this is the last point I'll make with this, I think it's important to remember this is how I view it, and this is what I look at. And one of the things we were talking about earlier today is, let's never forget that the real estate market is always about real people. Mm-hmm. Okay. Like I said, we always talk about these numbers and indexes and markets and interest rates or whatever, but it's always real people looking for places to live, raising their families, moving for work, whatever it is. And so you have places like Arizona specifically, where you've got a lot of people that are still looking for places to live.
A lot of jobs, a lot of things going on.
Right. And so what happens now is the demand, like we said, at the edges erodes, and maybe that demand slows, is they're figuring other stuff out, right? They're, like we said, they're moving in with roommates, they're staying home with their parents, they're figuring other stuff out in the meantime if they can't buy. But if things slow down, if things level out, and let's say those rates calm down or level out or come back down or wages cut, whatever it is, there is, and we've touched on this before, what we're calling shadow demand that's out there, where there are still people waiting in the wings. And as things normalize a little bit, I think what you're going to see is these people jump right back into it and jump right back at ready to buy those houses again. And so it's not that we won't have people to buy. We've got way more people looking to buy right now. And as long as we have multiple people looking for each property, that's going to continue. And so the risk we'll see actually is to the other side, that as this levels out, that demand will kick back in because we still have people looking for places to live. And we can't forget that.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really, really cool to see over the next couple of years. It's going to be a ride. Like, I think at the end of the day, this is not a boring time in our market. It's not.
There's
two different sides of things, right? It's when it's boring is the time where you're like, okay, this is probably the most basic, boring, balanced market we're going to get. We were thinking about the teens of our market as we moved up from 2013 to 2018, probably. That, looking back on history now, that was a boring market, but it was also a really good time to buy. Like, you can kind of see it. Boring times might be a great time. When it's stressful, if you really think about it, it's when either the market crashes or it speeds out of control. One of the two. That's when it's hectic. But that's also when it's anything can happen. The most opportunity is made in those markets. The most change is made in those markets, right? It's not steady. It's high risk, high reward opportunities as well. So these next 2 to 5 years, they're going to be, I mean, right now to 5 years. Yeah. I mean, but it's going to be like, we don't know what's going to happen at any point in time.
Yep.
Anybody could throw a rock in the pond at any point in time and change everything. And the Fed's essentially doing that right now with rate hikes. They're throwing little rocks in the pond until to see if it can fill up. So, I mean, I would say everybody hang on for it. Again, Pete and I are on a pretty strong stance of, we don't see this thing crashing anytime soon with where we're at. We just don't.
Slowdowns, yes. Crashes, no. Like I said, it'd have to go a lot you know, we'd have to see a lot more things happen from here, and we'll bring it up and talk about it if we start seeing those things.
Yeah. So awesome, guys. Appreciate everybody joining in today. Hope you guys got some good stuff out of it. We'll continue to talk about rates, the real estate market, and how this thing's heading through the Fed and a lot of the things coming into the summer. Obviously, months change, seasonality's coming. So we're excited to bring you a lot of that stuff as well. And like always, send your questions to questions@kpeleaz.com. And we look forward to tackling future discussions with you guys in the future.
See you guys.